Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. My guest today is Bob Eckstein, author of The History of the Snowman, and a humor writer for more than 20 years, and a cartoonist as well. We'll talk about that a little later. But first, I'd like to set the tone for this interview by reading from a poem that Bob found on a needlepoint throw pillow sold at a garage sale. I made a snowman as perfect as can be. I thought I'd keep it as a friend and let it sleep with me. I made it some pajamas and a pillow for its head. Then last night, he ran away. But first, he wet the bed. Bob Eckstein, welcome to Mr. Media.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm a fan of your site, too. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I have to ask you, there's so much snowman memorabilia in the book. I kind of wondered if you could only keep one piece of what you found over the time that you researched and collected for this book. What would it be?
Oh, geez, that's a hard question. I'd have to be choosing from over, about 800 items. But I guess I would pick one of the girly calendars he's posed with, one of the Playboy girly poses where he's with a bathing suit beauty. I think it's a great contrast to see the snowman flirting with one of these 1940s leggy, beauties.
That's the thing. People see the title of this book and imagine they think, oh, it's a nice little sweet gift book. But, there's a lot of fun, more adult stuff in here. You start right off with it. Were you surprised to see, as you got into this, how adult the snowman has been in history?
I was. And when I first started out, I thought, we'll see where this takes me. I was using other books for reference to see what they have uncovered. But shortly after my research, I found out that there was a lot of stories that were never told, never published before, and that the snowman's history went way deeper. And at that time, I felt like I had found the winning lottery ticket, because I realized that I had this endless pit of stories that go back to the Dark Ages, and that the snowman was a lot more than what people perceived it to be today.
Why did you start on this? I write books. I'm always looking for a good topic. I have to admit, this one would not have occurred to me.
Initially, it was I was at the crossroads of my career. It was about 7 years ago, and I was an illustrator for magazines, and I really wanted something that was more of a challenge. I wanted to do something that was going to be a little bit more oomph to it, and I was thinking about trying to do something with a mystery, trying to solve a mystery of some sort. I was a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, and that really appealed to me, but I didn't want to do something with crime. I mean, the story could have been something like who made the first sandwich or who told the first joke. But then I stumbled upon the snowman thing, partly because of Tim Burton's movie, Batman. When that movie came out, I was very intrigued by it because it kind of turned this sort of white-bread mainstream character played by Adam West in a very campy way. And Tim Burton turned it on its head. He made this whole character study. It was a dark picture, and that really appealed to me. And then I decided, what better character to take than the snowman, this very innocent, childlike icon that we all know about, take for granted, and try to just see if there was some kind of past in it, some kind of skeletons in its closet. And I was very lucky and fortunate to find it.
You have, in the book... It's interesting. This book is odd in not in a bad way, but in that it starts very current with the snowman. I mean, the first chapter is the age of expansion, the 21st century, and then you go backwards. Why that construction?
Because I didn't want to spoil it for my readers to have the answer right away. The question is really, who made the first snowman? And it's sort of like a mystery. I kind of try to show how I went deeper and deeper through history, and as each layer was pulled away, I found another little story. And to sort of start off first by just, you know, explaining that would kind of like give away a mystery, like it would be like just, you know, a Sherlock Holmes story, just giving the murder right away, the guy who did it. And it was a problem with the editors. The editors didn't like this idea initially because they wanted to keep traditional, and they explained the history books were always sort of in that logical way. Readers were more used to it. But once I explained to them the stories I was going to tell, they agreed with me and were on the same page to keep it a suspense and to let it flow.
And, of course, the advantage of telling the story backwards, sort of, is you get all the sexy stuff up front.
You're right. And, you know, another thing you pointed out, which I didn't think of before, but it kind of eases the person into it as well, because the stories get very unusual. They are shocking. Some of the things you don't expect them, they're sort of curveballs. And if I began that way in the beginning of the book, I think we lose people. I kind of had to ease people into it. As a matter of fact, a lot of people already told me, you know, they thought it was fiction. And I try to explain that, no, these stories are all real. And, you know, I went to real authorities and historians have backed me up and helped me with all the research. And for a lot of people, it's hard to believe some of these things.
If you've got a question for humorist and cartoonist Bob Eckstein, whose new book is The History of the Snowman, which is what we're talking about, give us a call, 646-595-3135. I suspect there will never be a more serious history of the snowman written than this, and yet, at the same time, this is a rather light and airy work as well. I mean, it's subtle in that it kind of hits you over the head at times with how funny it is.
No, I hope that other books come out. I'd be happy to see other people tackle the subject and even take it another step, because I don't expect myself to cover every single aspect. It's this sort of way that you uncover other stories. People come forth and they share stories, and hopefully we'll even learn more. And as for the book being academic, initially the book had about 40,000, 45,000 words. And when I first presented the manuscript to my editor, they felt it was like overwhelming. They felt, you know, this is a really intimidating book. Will people really want to invest so much time in the snowman? And I said, look, you know, I always wanted it to be entertaining more so than anything else. Let's keep it light, whimsical, and we'll cut it back. We'll make it, you know, for the everyday person. Not that I'm going to be speaking at institutions and, you know, I'm not an academic person anyway. I'm a gentleman scholar, I call myself. So I want to make it so it's like for the everyday person. I'm not interested in taking it to a point that it becomes dry history. I love making history fun.
Well, I want to tell people while they're listening to us talk, whether live or in the future on an archive download, check out Bob Eckstein's website, Today's Snowman. It's sort of like a newspaper for the snowman. It's www.historyofthesnowman.com. Historyofthesnowman.com. And you can get all the latest on what's happening with the snowman. You will be amazed, I promised.
Let me ask my readers there who they come across a snowman, but they make a snowman, document it. Take a picture. Send it in, because we have contests, and everyone on the website shares pictures of their snowman all over the place. And people send in pictures from, like, you know, the Middle East and China and stuff. And it's, like, a lot of fun just to see how other people make snowmen. And, you know, it's the sort of thing where now everyone can sort of see their snowman. Before, you're making a snowman in your front yard. It's already a public thing. You're already saying, look, I'm going to make artwork for everyone to see. And now we can take it up a notch. It can be seen worldwide.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, you've hit on something here that I suspect could have legs for years and years to come, especially with the website where you know, continually update it and add to the history of the snowman.
There was a time that it looked like global warming was going to be the very big issue last year until the economic situation came. And then there was the debate, which there was a YouTube snowman asking one of the candidates a question. So for a while, it looked like the snowman was going to sort of take the role of the spokesperson for that issue. In the same way, the duck-billed platypus at one time was sort of like the spokesperson for endangered species when that was a very hot topic a few years ago.
Do you find that most people think that the snowman starts and ends with Frosty?
Yeah, I try to break down that stigma, because when Frosty the Snowman came around, he kind of like tore down, in my opinion, tore down all the meaning behind the snowman. To me, the way I see the snowman now, it sort of has meaning that it's a folk art. It's sort of a reflection of ourselves. People make snowmen going back as a tradition to our ancestors, going back to prehistoric times. There's two things we've always wanted to do, which is to make a depiction of ourselves, whether it's on caves or sculptures, and to stack things on top of each other. And then Frosty comes along, and he's very lightweight, and sort of everyone now has this stigma of it being a child thing. But before Frosty, if you go back like, you know, a couple of hundred years before that, people made snowmen as adults. Regular artists made snowmen. Michelangelo made a snowman. It was a more serious thing. It even had, you know, it was had all this meaning behind it. It could be a political comment, or in some cases, it was an early form of pornography.
Pornography, the snowman. You're kidding.
That was a shock. You know, I was doing the research, and then I came across stuff that was unearthed by a professor in Amsterdam who had written about the miracle of 1511, which is sort of like a Woodstock of the Middle Ages. It took place in Brussels. What happened was that in this town, they had a snowstorm, and it was at a period when, you know, everyone was having a horrible time. You know, the Black Plague, and people were eating dirt for food. And,
right.
You know, the only forms of entertainment back then was like stilts and puppet shows. You know, no HBO or anything. And so when everyone had all this free art supplies kind of dropped in their front doorstep, people would go out and be artistic. And most people at that time, around 1511, a lot of people didn't read. There wasn't books. So people communicated the best way they can, as always, in any form of artwork. And they made these scenes all throughout the town, in the corners of all the streets and stuff. There were little scenes of political commentary with the local politicians as the figures in the scene, and there was also pornography. There was these sexual, very explicit sexual scenes made up. And this was an early form of pornography of sorts. It was a sort of recreation, and it liberated people back then to have a chance to express that thing, that thing being the sexual urges that people were getting and really didn't understand. It, like a lot of things back then, people didn't quite understand it. That's why you had the dance of death. People really didn't quite understand why people were dying. People would mock it, and then people would make a dance out of it. And the same way it happened with sexual feelings and stuff, and their conflicting feelings toward the church, with, you know, guilt and stuff like that. And this was a way of letting out steam.
Hmm. So how do you explain, speaking of sexuality and letting out steam and feelings that people can't explain, how do you explain the movie Jack Frost?
There's nothing to explain with that movie. That's an example, again, of an unfortunate typecasting. You have the potential of doing something interesting, and then you break it down. And hopefully Hollywood will one day give the snowman another chance at doing something that's halfway decent. I always feel like the snowman always got the short end of the stick. You have your Charlie Brown specials. You got your Grinch. All classics. People remember the songs, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we remember the Frosty song, but there's one song repeated over and over. I really believe it's a C production at best. And Hollywood has not done its share either with the following movies. None of them are really that great. I mean, there's a lot of good Christmas movies, but where's there a good snowman movie?
So, you mean Jack Frost, and for folks who haven't seen the movie, Jack Frost is a snowman in the movie, played by, I guess, Michael Keaton.
Yes.
There's actually a rape scene with the snowman.
Oh, no, no,
and
well,
Shannon...
there's two different movies now.
Oh, okay.
Let's make it clear that they're equally bad.
Okay.
We have the Michael Keaton movie in which he plays a dad who gets killed and logically comes back to life as a snowman. Now, his family finds out because they get a phone call. The snowman calls the wife and says, "You know, honey, I came back, and by the way, I'm a snowman in your front yard." Now, the other movie you're referring to is a slasher movie with a rape scene.
I got confused.
So one's rated PG, one's rated R. Both were giving a thumbs down.
And was it Jack Frost that had the really bad sequel as well?
Yes, it was the slasher.
Oh, the slasher one. Okay.
Right, and I don't know why in the world Michael Keaton would have done the other Jack Frost. I mean, hopefully, I mean, let's face it. I don't know what he's done since. I mean, this might be something that he hasn't even recovered from yet.
One of the fun things in here is you play the 6 degrees of separation game, the Kevin Bacon game, to see how far apart something is from Kevin Bacon, because no one is more than 6 degrees away from Kevin Bacon. You take us from Kevin. I'm going to just read this if it's okay with you. We have this is connecting Kevin Bacon to Jack Frost, the movie. So we have actor Kevin Bacon was in Picture Perfect, 1997, with Jennifer Aniston from Friends, in which she co-starred with Courtney Cox, who used to date Michael Keaton, who starred in Jack Frost, About a Snowman. But then it gets better, because you do it backwards, and you take the snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, who was played by Burl Ives, who was in Ensign Pulver, 1964, with Jack Nicholson, who starred in A Few Good Men, 1992, with Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon, I'll tell you.
That's my next book.
Yeah, there you go. That would be good. That would be fun. One of the things that's really cool in here, I started off by asking about all the memorabilia you collected. I would say, I mean, it seems like a good half of the book is taken up with illustrations and photos of snowmen throughout history. And that helps. I don't think you could do a book like this without all the illustrations. I don't think it would work as well. And this works very well.
And also you need the people to understand what it is that I'm talking about when I said that the snowman had a different sort of meaning before. Because I break up the book in two parts. There's this Renaissance snowman that I talk about, in which the snowman then becomes like sort of a piece of artwork, in which, you know, it really depicts a sculpture or a scene or something like that. So when I show those photographs in the book, you could see it's really some beautiful pieces of work, some real craftsmanship that is not done by a couple of five-year-olds in the front of the yard.
Yeah. No, it's very different. I think there's even a photo in here of, was it in Europe, where there's an academy where the art students, one of their graduation things is they have to build snowmen?
Yes, there's that takes place also in Moscow and different places where, you know,
It's
sort of a higher art form. There was it's an interesting story. It took place at the Revolution of 1870 in Paris, and there was a battalion who was on like a break. And they were messing around, throwing around snowballs and stuff. And the French soldiers in this particular troop were made up of France's leading artists and sculptors. It was a who's who group. And right now you wouldn't recognize the names. You and I wouldn't recognize the names. But back then this was the top echelon group. And they made the Snow Woman to pass the time. And this became actually a war rally cry. This symbol that they created would be a very famous symbol that was then engraved and published, and it became the symbol for that revolution. It's the most famous snow woman in history.
Interesting. I wanted to take you. Do you have a copy of the book in front of you?
Yes.
I figured you would. On page 22, there's an image here of Golden Age Green Lantern and Golden Age Wonder Woman making a snowman with what you say is some other superhero. Is it safe to guess that by now someone's identified that superhero to you?
No. We still
All right, I'm going to bring out my ultra geeky side here and tell you that is the Golden Age Flash.
Okay, well, see, now, I think you might be the only person who knows that. I'm going to have to get this down again later. I'm going to put this on my blog because I haven't been able to figure that out from anyone, even though I have, like, the leading historians working on this book. Nobody was geeky enough. I mean, no offense, Bob, but no one was geeky enough to tell me this.
Well, the clue, the tip-off is the hat. It's those are the wings on his hat that the more modern age Flash has on his ankles. For some reason, they started off on the head and they worked their way down to the. And you can see him. Actually, he has them on the ankles there too. Anyway,
now, it's a superpower that he's able to make snowmen without wearing gloves. Because from the illustration, he doesn't seem to be upset by the fact that he's wearing nothing on his hands.
Well, you know, the thing about the Flash is I think that he vibrates at super speed, and that keeps him warm. That's what makes him go fast. I think that was the thing. So
listeners can't see the picture right now, but he is working at the lower extremities of the snowman, and I think that's very telling too. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, but he's looking to the right. He's looking directly at Wonder Woman. I don't know if he's like working on the snowman or if he's getting ready to grab Wonder Woman and, you know, take her down. I'm not really sure there, so.
Well, I'm glad I did put this in the white trash here, because that's obviously where this is all going. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about using snowman to sell, which is chapter 4. You have it as the golden age of advertising since the early 20th century, snow sells. Why, in the early part of the century, particularly, did so many people turn to the snowmen to sell product? I mean, you have great illustrations here: Williams shaving soap, and Colgate, and let me see what else. There's a French sardine ad. There's a beech nut ginger ale. Why did people believe that they could sell product with snowmen?
You know, when the snowmen came around, it really made the ad agency's job a lot easier because, you know, they were always looking for some kind of image. It was around the turn of the century that people realized in marketing that their products would sell better if it was attached and married to some kind of logo or some kind of character. And then all of a sudden people were looking for that type of character. And the snowman would be one of the few people could universally identify with. Snowman projected this feeling of comfort, friendliness, and the snowman became effective. They started using it in ads, and people realized that, yes, that, you know, this character drew people in, and at the same time, the snowman wasn't charging anything. You know, whereas you'd have to hire someone, let's say a celebrity or somebody, to pitch something, the snowman was always there in the 11th hour if you couldn't come up with an idea, just to bring in the snowman to hawk an item. And it's amazing how many products the snowman has been attached to. It's sold everything from asbestos to canned ice, its own flesh and blood. And the way I try to figure out the history of this, because I really did try to look into it and figure out logically why this happened. Initially, it happened from his success selling alcohol. It was around the time I called the Dean Martin years, that the snowman was showing up in all these postcards and illustrations, always drunk and womanized. And what happened was is he became this great spokesperson for every beer company and every whiskey and gin, and he became very successful as a pitchman there first. It wasn't until later that he sort of cleaned up his act, sort of looked a little bit less like W.C. Fields, and he wore a fancier hat. He initially, with the alcohol, he was wearing a straw hat. He really did look like W.C. Fields. They looked a lot alike, and actually they've never been seen together at a party. But he later wore this, like, fancier hat and had a nicer scarf and stuff, and he seemed like more presentable to other companies for food products and clothes and things like that. So there was a sort of progression into becoming the Golden Age. He first started out as this sort of spokesman for drinking.
Now, if that happened today, you know, with all the special interest groups and people trying to protect the children, do you think that would fly today? Could a group use Frosty to sell alcohol or rolling papers or, you know,
no,
whatever? Or,
but he would wind up getting all the crap jobs. And I'll tell you why. even back then, he was doing the crap jobs. He would do things like advertise for dandruff. He was doing bad breath commercials. He was doing things like for gas and heartburn. So today, I guess he would be doing like Flomax, erectile dysfunction, you know, things like restless leg syndrome. I mean, he is doing some other commercials as well, but I think that if they got to the point that they needed someone who didn't want to step in, he would be doing those type of commercials. Unfortunately, Frosty did change that whole perception of him. You know, Frosty grew him into Kitsch, and now people see him very much a kid's character. But before Frosty, it really wasn't like that. As a matter of fact, some of the stuff I uncovered, it proves that really hard. I uncovered a Nazi propaganda film that uses a Frosty character to show. What they do is they're showing off the skills in Germany of the cartoonists and stuff, and they do this movie it's not directly a propaganda movie about the war, but it's a propaganda movie. It's showing Germany's superiority. So anyway, the snowman was used in a lot of different ways, was what I'm saying, before Frosty came along and sort of kind of ended all of that.
I want to remind folks, if you've got a question or a comment for humor writer and cartoonist Bob Eckstein, whose new book is The History of the Snowman, give us a call, 646-595-3135. Let me give you his website as well, if you want to follow along at home before you have the book, www.historyofthesnowman.com.
They could call in with a snowman problem as well, if someone has a problem with a snowman.
Maybe if they can't recall the words to Frosty the Snowman, could you maybe sing a verse of that? Would you be able to do that?
Well, we'll see what we can do. You know, I can't make any promises.
All right, somebody call in and ask him to sing a verse from Frosty the Snowman. I'd like to see it happen. We talked a little about advertising. Let's talk a little bit about go back to the movies a little bit. There have been a number of places, TV and movies. Obviously, everyone knows Frosty the Snowman, and we talked about the movie Jack Frost. There must be some in-between type appearances by snowmen in the cinema.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to his first major role, which would be Citizen Kane. You know, he had a pivotal role in the Citizen Kane scene, where it's like, to me, the most important scene in the movie anyway.
And of course it would be to you.
it's a scene where the kid is given away. The mother signed the papers to send the kid away. To me, that doesn't make it the most pivotal scene in the movie. It's because the snowman's just getting his head on and stuff like that. In that movie, actually, the backstory is that snowman was made with the painted cornflakes. And Orson Welles made the movie Citizen Kane, of course, and he was a stickler for these little details. And the reason why he included the snowman in the movie is because he always felt that he always had these amazing subtle messages in his movies, and one of them was the use of snow in the movie would project childhood. And he considered it a symbol of innocence, of course we all do. And that is why he incorporated in that movie and a couple of his earlier movies as well. You'll see snow coming down, let's say, in a scene in which a couple's having their first kiss. And as far as movies go in which snowman appeared before that, snowman actually appeared in some of the earliest movies ever, in silent movies. Silent movies came about around the 1890s. And some of the first movies included snowmen, and some of the first special effects included using snowmen, having the snowman come to life and being chased by the villagers and stuff.
George, is it Méliès?
I think so.
He did the trip to the moon, which most people know. You write about some of his earliest works, there were snowmen, but a lot of that was lost when he destroyed his work.
Yeah, we're talking about one of the great pioneers in filmmaking, and my memory is that he kind of got so frustrated from the lack of recognition his work received, because he was like this amazing pioneer of special effects too. The movie you refer to is introducing all these techniques that were never done before, and then later he destroyed all his movies. He burned them, and that's why we don't have any copies of Snowman and Silent movies. It was that and the fact that the movies were made of this very flammable material. And just like all the snowmen from the past, they melted away.
Is there no metaphor that's beyond you? I mean, you as you read the book, folks, you got to check this out in the book. Bob is able to make a connection between pretty much everything and Snowman. It's kind of like the Kevin Bacon game. I mean,
it's a very annoying personality trait that I developed. It's really annoying. I mean, try living with this. I mean, you're right. It's because, you know, for the last 6 years, it's been my whole life. Everything was referring to, like, snowmen and stuff. And you're right. It's unavoidable. And I have to go into therapy for this.
God. All right, folks, you got to buy the book now to help pay for Bob's therapy. It must be a lot of fun.
Group therapy. A snowman group. An intervention would be something I'll be welcoming right now.
I'm thinking you must be a lot of fun at parties these days. Can you talk about anything without connecting it to snowmen?
Quite honestly, I'm told I'm not that much fun at parties.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Not that you're not fun at parties, but that anybody would tell you, yeah. One of the things I kind of stuck out at me was you talk about Hans Christian Andersen. Now, I guess, you know, I must have just not really focused on him in a long time, but I didn't know that there was this suggestion that there was a very homosexual undercurrent in some people's view of his work. And you talk about this story that he did, Snemanden, the snowman. Can you tell folks a little about that and the controversy about that?
Well, there was another book about him, a biography, which was exploring his diaries. And I'm going to ask all the children now listening to cover their ears, earmuffs. The diary indicated like little stars in the days that he masturbated, according to the this is the interpretation of the writer who wrote the biography. And basically the book kind of uncovers him as being homosexual, but more so being asexual. What does it have to do with the snowman? Well, not much. But the thing is, I made the tie that the book includes his poem. He has a famous poem about a snowman. And I make the case that the snowman he describes is one of the first gay snowmen. This was really exciting to some people who are, you know, always like to hear about news regarding people being outed and stuff. And I did this really fun interview for Gaydar, which is a gay website, and we talked at length about Hans Christian Andersen creating his first gay snowman. I don't make it so much a clear, blatantly gay snowman, but it is interesting that, well, I'll let everyone else draw their own conclusions when they read that part, but I actually painted myself in the corner because I'm not sure how I want to say this, but it is a fun little chapter, and it does give a little more insight to the poem that people initially thought just had this sort of surface meaning, when in fact he was actually expressing some hidden feelings he was constantly hiding. And it's an example of, you know, how he really was genius. He really had, his poems really had a lot more double meanings than people would think initially, and it really gives a whole new perspective to his poetry.
And there's a connection here too to the Falkland Islands. I mean, everything is connected to everything. There's the Hans Christian Andersen stamp from the Falkland Islands. I don't know. You know, every time you turn a page in here, there's something that makes you chuckle.
Well, thanks. I mean, I did try to find like where we were looking over things and taking the snowman for granted, because it was such a universal icon in our consciousness that we've sort of like overlooked it. So I did want to re-examine this feature that we have in every winter, and we kind of like, you know, took it for granted.
In the there's a section of color photos. We have a photo of snowman basically on fire, and it says blowing up snowmen is a legal holiday in Switzerland. And then down in the same page, there's this. I would have guessed this was Chinese, but it's not. It's a snowman public service announcement in Japan, and it's got these very innocent-looking illustrations and showing someone building a snowman. But then above it, there's a translation of the Japanese, and it says, "Would you stick a cigarette butt in the snowman that your child built?" It's like, and that means or connects to what? I don't know, but it made me laugh.
I don't understand it myself, even. I believe this was like in the subways where people were to put out their cigarettes, put them out on the top of a snowman.
It's like over the summer, as the preparations for the Olympics in Beijing were going on, we were hearing all these wonderful stories that surfaced periodically about signs that have been translated from Chinese to English, and they always have these very bizarre meanings. I assume that was similar to that. And along that line, the very next page, I don't want to give away everything in the book, I just want to give people a taste of it, but there's the poo-pooing snowman, because
right.
Everyone poops. When I've worked on books, biographies, for example, it seems like all the best stuff always comes out after the book, because then you're flooded with people who say, "Oh, you should have gotten this in there. You should have gotten that in there." What kind of things have entertained you that people have come to you with of snowmen? And if you were to do a sequel or an update, what would we see?
Well, I mean, oh my goodness! I mean, you hit me with so many questions there, Beth, because when you mentioned China, the first thing I thought of was I'd like to return there and really look into this one little clue that I have, which has been unresolved. It might take my whole lifetime to solve this, but what I did was I went through the old papers, religious papers, which stated in sixth or seventh century that making a Buddha out of snow was something that was acceptable, which sort of insinuates that snowmen were being made in sixth and seventh century northern China. And I did have Asian experts work with me on the book to try to uncover anything we could find, going through old diaries and see if we can uncover things like that. And to answer your other question about what's exciting about when I was doing the book and things that people were presenting, this was an example of that, where people were coming forth with their expertise, things I wouldn't even think of, and showing me what they've learned, and then combining all these pieces to this puzzle to try to solve who made the first snowman. So as a sequel, I mean, that's something I would want to revisit, is to see really if I could come down to learning more about these mysterious snowmen, these little clues that I received that sort of wound up being a dead end. Unfortunately, I didn't have a name of a caveman who made the first snowman, Urg from the third cave from the left or something. I mean, I wish I had a more specific thing like that. And that's something to, go back to and see if I can find out more stuff. at some point when I was doing the book, I had to stop and say, there's already a lot here. There's so much here. And if I let myself, I would never finish the book. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I would have never been able to do the book at all until the time that I started it. When I began around 2000, it was then that they had this database for all the different university papers that were written and gave me access to all these obscure, people's final papers, they were professors' university papers, things that were not published into a normal thing. And I had access to all that information. And I would not have been able to make this book without access to the internet and that. So this book came as early as it could have came. I also had emailed all the different historians who work with this book, and I was in constant contact through the internet. So it's a book of its time. It is what it is, and I am proud of it for that reason, that it was so comprehensive.
Hmm. Well, I have to tell you, there is, of course, a web chat that accompanies the live interview, And Just JR says, snowmen rule. So I want to share that with you. Bob, how do you make your living day to day? Before we wrap up here, tell me a little bit about your work as a humor columnist. Where can people read you? Where can they see your cartoons these days?
Oh, well, thanks. Well, I do cartoons for different magazines. I appear in Reader's Digest doing cartoons. I just began working for The New Yorker. I had one piece in The New Yorker recently. And I do cartoons for The New York Times and write humor for them. Usually I appear in the sports section. And it's sort of a new thing that I'm doing the cartooning full-time. Before the book, I was an illustrator, and I would do writing for different places, articles. But while I did the book, I wanted to have an intermission in the book. I wanted to have a collection of the world's greatest cartoons about snowmen. Hmm. And what I did was I went to The New Yorker, and I met the people there, and I had a chance to meet some really great people who I looked up to, people like Sam Gross and other people you see in The New Yorker. And they were all very kind. And what I did was I made an arrangement to have their cartoons in my book. And they were very kind and asked me out to lunch, to that famous Tuesday lunch where all the cartoons get together once a week. And they talk about cartooning. And they're, you know, fascinating people like Gayham Wilson and Danny Shanahan and stuff. So I had a good time at the lunch. It was good food, good chatting. And I asked if I could come back. And they said, well, you know, why don't you submit some cartoons? You have to do 10 sketches a week. It's a very grueling schedule where every week you turn in 10, and they pick, I think, 15 cartoons to buy out of a couple of thousand they get each week. So it's very competitive. So anyway, I did go back the next week because I had a good time, and they bought the first cartoon I showed. And I got hooked. And I've now started to do cartoons for other magazines as well, places like the Harvard Business Review, Barron's, and the Wall Street Journal. So in those places like that, I'm going to try to do more. I am working on another book, so my time is kind of divided. The other book is on Arctic exploration, and it's about a diary, a lost diary, of a man who was trying to find a reward in 1840 from a missing ship. There was a ship that was trying to find the Northeast Passage, trying to get to China by going north of Canada. When Sir John Franklin's ship disappeared, England put up this enormous reward for anyone who could find any clues of the missing ship. And people went out there unprepared and just went out there. And I have a diary about this. That's a graphic novel. And I've been working on that.
Excellent. Well, it's been a very interesting conversation. I want to tell people how they can find your book. That just came up on the web chat, so let me tell you. The book is available, of course, at your local bookstore. It makes a great gift, I'm sure Bob would like you to know. Also, you know, because the snowman, and it's pointed out, snowman is non-denominational, so, you know, you can give it to boys and girls of any religion, pretty much, right?
Absolutely. But maybe non-denominational and biodegradable.
And biodegradable, of course. And, you know, paper is endangered, so you want to buy a book now to keep it because, you know, a year from now we may not even have books. But you can get it at your local bookstore. You can order it online at Amazon.com or MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. And, of course, for all the latest breaking news on snowmen, check out Bob Eckstein's website, www.historyofthesnowman.com. Bob, it was great to have you on today. I hope you had a good time as well.
I did. Thanks so much for letting me chat like this at length. It's a lot of fun to go into it more. I remember not too long ago I was on a Shock Jock show, and they said, you're going to be on for 15 seconds. I get on, and the guy screams, Nazi snowman, what's your thoughts?
Oh, you know, I had that in my list of questions, but I ran out of time. I meant to ask you about that. well, listen.
Thanks so much
continued,
for not asking that question.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Listen, continued good luck with the book and everything else you're working on. And, you know, next project, come back again. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
All right, Bob. Take care. Happy holidays. Folks, you can, for dozens more celebrity and media newsmaker interviews, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with authors such as A.J. Jacobs, Harvey Frommer, Peter Gallenbach, Pete Williams, Tim Dorsey, Sarah Zarr, and many more. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, DigitalJournal.com, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, MediaFly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Odeo, the Kindle Reader, or iTunes. It's very easy to find Mr. Media wherever you are on the net. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N.com. Thanks again so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you take a little time out of your day to share it with us. Bye-bye, everybody.